This is Dan Barish, the Jewish liberal from Cleveland.
And this is Matt Shepard, the conservative Mormon from Seattle.
And we are the Common Ground, but not the Common Ground, the coffee I just drank, just the Common Ground singular.
I don't drink coffee as a Mormon, so...
And as a Jew, I drink it. Woohoo! Although it is not included
It isn't used in any Jewish... It's not, like, prescribed or anything in certain...
No, there's no commentary that you shouldn't have coffee. Nope. We don't have a rule against caffeine or alcohol or anything like that. Certainly against pork. There's nothing about caffeine that I've ever heard of.
At a Seder, you use wine, right?
Yes. And at any other Jewish occasion, you're going to have, you know, or most, there's certainly going to be wine involved, no question.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anyway, today's topic, we're going to be discussing taxes from an all-around perspective. Our general consensus is that taxes are necessary, and they're used to support the things that we need the government to do.
Exactly, like... building and maintaining roads, police, fire department, clean water to drink, basics like that.
Mm-hmm. Which, it's kind of funny, most of those are supported by your local taxes, not by the federal taxes. Now, the interstates and federal highways and that sort of thing are supported there, but your local police, firemen, those are all local and state
right.
taxes. So the federal taxes go for a large number of things, supporting things like your student loans and the military and the welfare programs and Medicare, and all of that sort of
thing. Yep. So, what are things that we might disagree on here?
I think one of the biggest things is, one is the actual, you know, the income tax, I think, is one of the biggest things. Well, there's actually the regressive taxes, which the Medicare and Social Security, those sort of taxes are, it's an interesting animal, since only the first, was it 100,000? I think it's the first 100,000 dollars of your income are taxed for the purposes of Social Security and Medicare.
Perhaps my stepfather would know more about this because he's a civil lawyer, and I don't think that I'm ever going to make $100,000 because I'm a social worker. So this is academic in my personal life.
Yes. Although it is interesting to note, it was I think 60. It was either 60 or somewhere between 60 and 80% of wage earners in America at some point are in the top 20% of American earners at some point in their life.
Huh.
So rather nice statistic, you know, showing that yes, we there is a lot of movement within the hierarchy of wages, if you will.
Most assuredly.
So it's
rather
comforting. So things that we disagree on, I think, would be like what the fair rates would be is one of the biggest things.
I'm not sure you're going to find robust disagreement from me for the simple reason that I haven't done a lot of thinking about exactly what the tax rate ought to be.
Mm-hmm.
And
what do you think about corporate taxes?
Well, everything I've heard tells me that apparently the United States has got the highest corporate tax rate in the whole world.
Which is true. As Japan lowered theirs, like 3 years ago, so that's when we became number one.
Right. And, of course, American corporations have gone very much out of their ways, or at least the very big ones, you know, all sorts of very creative strategies to avoid the highest possible tax rates. Apple is an example. Burger King... having just bought Tim Hortons so that they could move their headquarters to Canada.
It hasn't actually officially happened yet. They haven't bought Tim Hortons. The offer is just on the table.
Oh, I know, but that's the agenda. And we know that it isn't because Burger King wants to have a better offering for breakfast, although that's a benefit because Tim Hortons is delicious.
I've never been to Tim Hortons, but I do have one of their lemonade bottles.
No, Tim Hortons is fantastic. It's I got introduced because I went to college in Indiana, and there was a Tim Hortons in Richmond, Indiana, and thus I was introduced to the delicious, delicious Tim Hortons. I surprised Anne one night with coffee and donut. No, it wasn't coffee. It would have been too late, but something. I got her. But maybe it was apple cider. I think it was hot cider and a donut. Surprised her late at night once with that, and then I turned it into a tradition.
So you would say they're better than Dunkin' Donuts?
Hey, Anne.
Yeah?
Is Tim Hortons better than Dunkin' Donuts?
She says
they're pretty much the same. I barely ever go to Dunkin' Donuts, so I don't feel equipped to have an opinion about it.
I'm not a huge fan of Dunkin' Donuts so
I haven't had a donut in quite some time.
Well, if you include sweet bagels, I had one yesterday, but that was because there was leftover from a office meeting, a morning office meeting. And, yeah. Free food is one way to definitely bring me around.
Oh, you poor listeners. We were supposed to be talking about taxes, and now we're talking about donuts.
Oh, well, we gotta, you know. So, yeah, Tim Hortons, like, the only experience I have with Tim Hortons is I worked I worked at a company that made syrups, and they made some lemon syrup for Tim Hortons. So, and one of the perks of the job was I could grab a bottle of a syrup if it seemed like a syrup that I would want to have. So I have a couple of bottles of Tim Hortons lemon syrup, which is...
That's funny. So you've never been to a Tim Hortons in your life, but you have a bottle of their lemon syrup.
Yep.
That's hilarious.
Yeah. I don't even know if there's one in the area.
Well, I don't know.
We're pretty close to Canada, so I would assume there's somewhere close.
If you wanted to start driving to Canada, how long would it take you to hit the border?
About 2 hours.
Right. Even less time than me.
Yeah, well, you have to go around Lake Erie. If you could drive straight, then it would be probably somewhat comparable.
Yes.
Maybe
if
a little less.
If I had
less,
a boat or a helicopter, but never mind that. I can't have nice things.
Mm-hmm. Well, on those rare occasions, you can actually see the coast of Canada, right? With those odd optical illusions off of Lake Erie.
It's called Sarah Palin vision.
they actually do have, when there's an air inversion, it bends the light. So you can actually see kind of floating above Lake Erie, the shore, the Canadian shore.
Oh, yeah. No, I don't spend too much time looking at Lake Erie.
I don't either, and I've never actually seen it, but it is a real phenomenon.
Oh, cool. No, but I will proudly state that I can see Russia, Taiwan, and Benghazi from my house, if I'm high enough. No, wait, I didn't say that out loud.
If you see the fat George can see Germany through his telescope. It's a quote from Amazing Grace. I guess when one of the English kings, like when he got older and senile, and telescopes became a new thing, he thought he could see Germany through his telescope.
Oh, well, King George III went mad with porphyria.
Yeah, well, you know more about mental disorders than I do.
Well,
so.
Actually, this is a fascinating, this has nothing to do with taxes, but it's worth sharing. King George III... was actually the beginning of a shift in public attitude toward mental illness, because before he went mad, the mentally ill, you know, they were an object of ridicule. If you go to the Imperial War Museum in London, that's a building that used to be a mental asylum, and they would trot them out on Sundays and people could throw food at them, and that was like fun. It's like, let's go throw things at the crazy people. But then the king goes mad, and mental illness shifts from, let's throw food at them on a Sunday, to they're objects of pity, because sad. And I agree with the idea that pity is really just a cousin of contempt, and so is something that should also be avoided, but it's better than throw tomatoes at them.
Yes. You know, it's like the old superstition things, like happened in the time of the Bible, where, oh, did this man sin? Like, this person sinned, so that's why he was born this way. Or maybe his parents had some wrong in their past that caused them to have these issues. And so to them, it was, all right, well, they deserve this. This is what God put upon them. And Christ, in a lot of ways, tried to change those ideas. He's like, look, no, that's not why this happened. Like, you should have compassion on these people. Hasn't always happened. It hasn't. Well, obviously, that was in Christianity. So, like, England was a Christian nation at the time. So, definitely hasn't happened. But that's something we should always strive for.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how. It's not your fault whatsoever. But I don't have much passion about taxes. I mean, if I were speaking to a really hardcore libertarian, I mean, and I'm not going to name this individual, but certain individuals who go on basically saying that taxes are theft at gunpoint and that we're all slaves because of the national debt. I suppose in a very loose sense they're right, because I'll go to jail if I don't pay my taxes, but they're stupid. They're just stupid, and I have very little patience for them. And you're not one of those people. And so,
no, I'm not.
Because I disagree with you much. Sorry, what?
Oh, yeah, I think that our biggest disagreement, like, to me, one thing I really wanted to point out to our listeners is the Laffer curve. I've mentioned this to you several times.
Yeah.
So the Laffer curve is basically a curve, if you tax at 0%, you get $0. If you tax at 1%, you get more than you did with $0. And then you go up, the line goes up, and is to the total amount of tax revenues. But if you tax at 100%, no one's going to do a thing because there's no incentive to work at all. So
right.
You also get zero receipts in taxes. So at some point, there's a hump where it changes from you increase the tax rate, and it actually your tax revenues start to go down. So depending on what the tax is, that hump will be at different places. But the current best for income, the current best estimate for that hump is at 33%, which comes from a study that was done by a former Obama economic advisor. So to me, the highest income tax that we should have should be 33%. Like, that should be our highest income tax rate. I would like it to possibly be lower, but to me it makes no economic sense to have tax rates that go past the hump.
And by the way, people who earn that kind of money are going to find ways to get around the taxes anyway, if you put it too high.
Well, that's where that tax revenue going down happens, because you give them more and more incentive to avoid the tax.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the biggest drivers of the hump is after that certain point, then people become like, okay, this is becoming burdensome. I'm going to see what I can do to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
And often, there are very legal ways of doing that, and sometimes illegal ways of doing it. If they do illegal ways of doing it, then they should be punished on that. But interestingly, the reason with like capital gains, people are like, well, the people with capital gains get a different tax rate than the people who get real income. Well, one of the biggest reasons for that is that the Laffer curve peak is somewhere less than 20% for capital gains.
Mm.
And at least in the U.S., because we know when the Bush tax cuts dropped it from 20 to 15%, the capital gains rate, it actually increased. The tax receipts from capital gains increased. So that Laffer curve, the actual hump is somewhere less than 20%. So
I mean,
I
actually have never really objected to the capital gains tax being lower, because what's missed is these are the people who power the economy in a lot of ways.
Yeah, they're the people with a lot of disposable income to go towards the next great ideas, towards towards philanthropy,
mm-hmm.
towards a lot of those things.
Right, right. The problem with some New Deal liberals is that we have a tendency to see the rich as a source to be drained rather than people with resources to power the economy, but the rest of us simply do not possess.
Yeah. I did have an interesting idea that I wanted to throw by you, Dan, see what you thought.
Okay.
I don't know how well this would work in practice, but in theory it seems like an interestingly plausible idea. If we reduced the tax rates by a certain amount, and then at the same time created a mandate to give that whatever that tax rate difference was to nonprofit organizations.
Huh.
So basically, like, so as opposed to the government taking care of people, it'd be a semi-government mandated way of like taking care of the poor and that sort of thing.
So you're saying
but
that you lower the tax
rate
and you mandate that people give the difference to charity, basically?
Exactly, yes.
Hmm. I think you might have a danger of running into religious objections.
Well, I mean, we give the money to the government anyway, and then people can give it to their church if they're religious, or they can give it to it's the people can decide where that money would be best spent in the charitable world. And so it, in my mind, would give people a little more control over their income, and there'd be less griping at the government, like, well, you're taking my money and giving it to somebody who's you know, not working or undeserving or whatever it is, but you would get to decide. And it would, you know, it bolster a lot of that economy and possibly
here's the interesting thing. If our tax dollars are supposed to maintain the separation of church and state, and if you say, well, I want to give it to a religious organization, want to donate to my church, whoa, buddy, that was basically tax dollars. How does that work?
Well, it's not tax dollars.
Well, it's government mandated. It's government mandated giving.
Well, so, I mean, we have a, you know, if I give money to my church, that's already a tax-deductible gift. That's tax-deductible. So it'd basically be under the same thing, but it's a mandated tax-deductible thing. So you must give 5 or 10% of your income to any tax-deductible source. Like, if I gave this, it would be a tax-deductible thing. So, you know, that, like, the tax deductions for giving to churches, I have, as of yet, haven't heard anybody decrying that as a issue with separation of church and state. So, in my mind, there shouldn't be an objection. You know, again, this is all hypothetical, and, you know, in practice, probably would be very difficult to do.
Yeah, probably impractical. As a thought. You'd have another bureaucratic monster in terms of certifying it had been done and all that fun stuff.
Well, I would rather have the bureaucratic monster on the side of the enforcement rather than on the side of the, you know, I'm going to be the government and take care of people side, in my head. But I would rather have people be able to run their programs and have kind of a philanthropic competition, as it were, as opposed to it's the government and there's no competition between it. Mm-hmm. And so there's no driver for...
I mean, part of the point to me of
government welfare is that you've got the ability to centralize the distribution of the help. The problem is that it's not always done in the most efficient way, so many ways.
As an interesting side note on that, when I was unemployed for the majority of a year, we signed up for, Medicaid for like a couple months. And I've been trying to cancel that Medicaid for probably 10 months now, and they won't cancel it.
Wow. So they keep sending us Medicaid.
I can't get off Medicaid. I'm like, I have wanted to be off this for like 10 months. Can we get off of this? And we call them, we do all these things, and they won't let us go. And they keep sending us letters saying, if you don't renew your Medicaid, it's going to go away. And then we keep getting those letters. Like, yeah. Like, really? We call them all these things, and yeah. So that's the kind of thing.
And then here I would like to avoid. Is that it's not always perfectly efficient, to say the least.
Yeah. Then again, if it became some kind of behemoth like Comcast, then we'd still have that problem.
Oh.
Can I cancel my Comcast subscription? Yeah. Why? Why do you want to leave the best service and the best person ever? We're the greatest company in the world. What is wrong with you for wanting to leave?
Yeah, we've got Time Warner Cable. We don't hate them, but, you know, it bothers me pretty deeply that there is no real competition in the U.S. Cable industry at all.
The only biggest competition, one, is from the satellite dish companies, and two, from local and small cable. But a lot of places don't have the local small cable companies, which there are a lot of those, but they don't cover a lot of places.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so it bothers me, you know, we've got, most U.S. consumers have far slower internet than the typical Japanese internet connection, South Korean, Central European. We've really fallen far behind, and I think you agree with me that it's an economic issue, and it's a long-term national security issue in the sense of a country's security comes from the strength of its economy, and our competitiveness is damaged if our infrastructure is inferior to that of other nations.
Yeah, which is why I'm hoping the FCC does not approve the merger.
Oh, I really hope they don't approve it. I'm cynically thinking that they will. I've never really thought that they wouldn't. But then again, the merger of AT&T and T-Mobile was disallowed, and that was a wonderful thing because T-Mobile is now like this, you know, destructive force to a calm in the industry. I mean, think of how disruptive they've become.
Yeah, it's competition is good. in the market. You know, it drives innovation and that sort of thing. It drives prices. It drives transparency. It drives mm-hmm. great customer service. I mean, look at the car insurance market. The car insurance market, there is a lot of competition going on, and you can get great service and you can get the stuff that fits you pretty well. Like, if you're not satisfied with your car insurance, it's pretty easy to go to somebody else.
Yeah. Yeah.
They've made it that way.
Right. Yeah. No. And we've changed our gas provider a few times just because somebody else comes to us with a cheaper rate, and it's like, sure.
Yeah, like, but natural gas is natural gas. So.
Right. But I've looked at you know, Google does something really handy. I don't know if you've seen this, but so Google has this really useful feature. They can see everyone's, you know, viewing experience on YouTube. So all you have to do is put in your zip code, and they'll tell you, here's how good YouTube performance is in your area for all the different internet providers that exist. And, like, some of them are HD certified, or in other words, you are most likely most of the time to get HD quality bandwidth and not have to rebuffer too often or at all. And so I found
that is an interesting idea. That's awesome.
Oh, it's great.
I need to look at that.
Yes. And so I found with that data that I'd probably have slightly faster internet. In fact, so for my area, I'm still on Time Warner Cable. We kept them as we moved. But that if we went to AT&T broadband, it would be faster. Right now, I'm not annoyed enough that I want to change, but I'm keeping it in the back of my head as an option.
Yeah, I don't have cable. I don't have a television. So we do everything from our computer.
We actually don't have cable television. We, in fact, don't own a television proper. We have a 22-inch monitor into which is hooked everything.
Yeah, so you're about the same as I am.
Right. I mean, I'm definitely a cable cutter, as they are called. It's, you know, we use broadband internet, and we entertain ourselves via Netflix, Amazon Prime, iTunes if we really want to buy a show, and also talking to each other, although we try to avoid that. Also, we read to each other, or at least I read to her.
We do the same thing, like, for our kids. I have a dual screen setup, so I throw on one screen the video, and I can be reading the news or working on some project or doing something else on the other screen, and the kids are just great. They just sit on my lap. We have some great, you know, daddy kid time.
Awesome.
And I interact with them every, you know, and it's awesome. Dual screen, it's great.
Huh.
Yeah, we got our secondary screen. We got from like a secondhand store like 3 years ago for like $25, and it's been working great ever since. So
nice. I suppose I could do a dual screen setup on my Mac, but it'd be a pain in the butt.
One of the reasons I don't have a Mac.
Macs over the years have changed their outputs. My first MacBook Pro had S video out. It was DVI, but I could convert to S video through an adapter. And the MacBook Pro I have is a mid-2010 model. It's got mini DisplayPort.
A mini DisplayPort? What is that?
It is something that Apple used for some time, but it's not HDMI, that's for sure.
Apple and their proprietary stuff.
I'm not sure if Apple invented mini DisplayPort, but I'm not sure who else ever used it. I can't remember off the top of my head if current MacBook Pros have HDMI instead. But quite frankly, the only time I've ever used my mini DisplayPort is to connect to an adapter, a VGA adapter, to hook up to a projector. I've never established a native mini DisplayPort connection in my life, and I don't think I will.
So, you know, so our listeners know, we're both into computers. Dan is more of a Mac person, I'm more of an open source / Windows person. It's rather a funny dynamic.
Oh, yeah.
And yet we still get along. But Dan and I, when it comes down to actual make a hard decision, Dan and I don't agree on a lot of different things. But in the basic and in the back end, we do agree on things. And that's how most of America is, people. We can talk to each other and get along just fine if we will listen.
Now, will you please join me in paying homage to Steve Jobs?
He's a great man, but I'm not going to meditate to him.
Matt? Okay, right. what good are you? Okay.
All right, we're not going to pull a, what was that, 1924, that book. The book where they all worship Henry Ford.
Oh, Brave New World.
Brave New World. Yeah, I'm not going all Brave New Worlds on Steve Jobs.
Yeah, that's really good. Yes.
I appreciate the people who do a lot of innovations, and Steve Jobs definitely has driven the world towards a whole new way of thinking, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway.
Thanks for listening to our meandering conversation that had a little bit to do with taxes and a lot to do with a lot of other things. But I'm done for now, so this is Matt signing off.
And this is Dan signing off.